Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And I have to tell you that sometimes you hear a talk, read something, and it's kind of like right place, right time for what you're thinking of doing. And I was about a year ago playing around with my scraps, trying to figure out sort of a new way to handle them, to organize them, store them. And I had Joan Ford come on and talk about her method and what she does. And it was like one of those aha moments for me. It's like, oh, I can do it that way. That works for the way my brain works. So it's been, a little while. Joan hasn't been on to talk to us, and I thought it'd be great to have her talk some more about scraps and what she's been doing lately. So welcome to the show, Joan.
Hey, Pat. Nice to be here.
So before we talk scraps, you were just on a quilt cruise to Alaska. What was that like?
Oh, my goodness. It was fabulous. It was just fabulous. I've never done a quilt cruise before. And it was just great. We did a new project using pre-cut fabrics from Huffman. And the theme of the cruise was breakfast at sea, because we used Snaps, crackers, and pops, and that just sort of went together. The project was called Over Easy, and everybody just loved it. It was just wonderful. So, and, of course, the sights were fabulous, and it was a shop hop as well. So we stopped in Juneau and shopped and did some damage, left some money in the great quilt shops in Alaska and Skagway
and I hear there's like
even on our stop back in Victoria.
And don't you have? Was there like a quilt shop in every port on the Alaska cruise?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of them we had to travel a little bit to get to it, but. They were just fabulous, and of course, lots of Alaska-themed quilt fabrics and things. It was great. I can't talk highly enough about it. I had a great time.
Did one of the projects stand out, an Alaska-themed item that you can share with us? Because I'm sure it's only really found there.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of very, very distinguishable Native American-type fabrics and themed prints, as well as themed patterns. But of course, you know, my company is Hummingbird Highway, so there were a lot of different hummingbird fabrics there as well. Because of course, on the West Coast, there's many more different types of hummingbirds than we see here in the East. So
I gravitated
to the hummingbird projects.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that they had different kinds on the other coast. How interesting.
Oh, yeah. Lots more types of hummingbirds over there.
So let's talk a bit. When I saw you at the trade show, we got a chance to talk a little bit, and you brought me this really great new project kit that you've been doing. And the one you gave me was the mini mug mat. So tell me a little bit about this new grid that you're doing minis on.
Well, I've always been interested in smaller projects, smaller items using little bits of scraps, because, of course, you know I love using up my scraps whenever I can. And I created a quilt for the second book. The second book is Scrap Therapy, Scraps Plus One. And the cover quilt on that book had, maybe about 500 little mini nine patches that finished to an inch and a half. So that means sewing together one-inch squares.
Mm-hmm.
A nightmare, right? Nobody wants to do that. So I never thought anybody would want to make that quilt. I just thought they'd want to own it by owning the quilt, quilt book. So when several people came to me and said, you know, I bet you have an interfacing for this, I thought, maybe it's time to develop one. So this interfacing is called the Mini Scrap Grid, is basically a way to stabilize those little one-inch squares using interfacing. And the interfacing has printed lines for where you place your fabrics and even where you sew your seams. So it makes really accurate little nine patches. And I'm having so much fun developing all kinds of new things with this interfacing, and starting off with the mini scrap grid
the mini mug mat
that you have.
So let's explain this a little bit more, because I'm holding the interfacing, and it has, would I cut apart, so like each little nine patch I would work on separate, or are you working on this whole grid, which is a 3x3?
Well, you there's a couple different ways you can do it, but the idea is that you start looking at it as if there's little nine patches built in.
Mm-hmm.
And the grid is broken down into groups of nine patches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so you don't have to go all the way across the interfacing. The panel actually consists of six of those nine patches. I like to call those niners.
Mm-hmm.
And the interfacing is probably about 20 inches wide by about 36 inches long. So there's six of those niners on
mm-hmm.
each panel. But that even seems a lot to sew across, especially when you're sewing little one-inch squares. So I broke it down. The printing, actually, you can cut around those little nine patches and sew them as a group of nine or sew them each individually. Either way, you're sewing with a much more reasonable size than just mm-hmm. one-inch squares that haven't been stabilized by the interfacing. And it's fusible, so basically you place the one-inch scraps right on top of the grid, and the placement is very easy because the lines are all clearly identified.
Mm-hmm.
And then sew, you fold and sew, and the sewing lines are right there as well.
So now, because it's an interfacing, are you fusing it before you sew?
Yes. You place your scraps on the fusible side of the interfacing,
mm-hmm.
right side up. So you place the fusible interfacing on your ironing board, the fusible side, the little rough fusible dots facing
mm-hmm.
up, and then you put your scraps on top, so they're right side up, and then fuse them with a hot iron, maybe a little puff of steam.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fold, once the scraps are all fused, you fold on the lines, and then there's dotted lines and solid lines. You fold on the dotted lines, sew on the solid lines, and you really can't go wrong. And just in case, there's also a really complete tutorial, step-by-step, on my website in case you get all fouled up and need a little extra tutorial.
Yeah, sometimes we need to see something more, don't we?
There's so many little bits to this that it was important to make sure that people appreciated all the details to it. So there's no reason why this should be a heartache. It should be fun. And so lots of details, lots of background to help you out.
I think it does sound fun, and I'm not one to work with such tiny pieces. You know, they were like, that's like trash for me, anything that small. I'm like, okay, you know, that's the kind you put in the pillowcase for the dog beds and, you know, for the home,
to be
for
honest,
the shelters.
I don't save one-inch squares since my scrap sizes that I like to use are 2, 3.5, and 5-inch squares.
Mm-hmm.
The 2 and 5-inch squares very quickly become the right numbers of scraps for the nine patches just by taking a 1-inch strip.
Mm-hmm.
Take your 2-inch square, cut it twice, and you've got 4 1-inch squares, or your 5-inch square very quickly becomes 25 one-inch squares. So I don't save those little scraps either. I'm like you. I don't really want to handle or store or stack any of those little one-inch pieces.
Oh, well, that's really perfect then, because I've been doing, you know, the kind of the sizes that we talked about a year ago, because that really made sense for me to have less and then just use those, because that works for my brain, you know, just not having quite so many little pieces. What is the best tip that you can give for putting the little pieces, the one-inch squares, onto this fusible, the foundation?
Well, I think the best tip is that it follow the lines. It's when you're using small pieces, I think it's really important that a little bit off can show. And so by following the lines, sewing where the lines are, placing the fabrics where the lines indicate, the dotted lines indicate that you place the fabrics, it's really foolproof. You can't really go wrong. When you don't use the interfacing, I think it's even more important to watch those seam allowances and go slowly because, again, there's such little margin for error. A little bit off can mean your nine patch just doesn't look quite right.
I think it's very hard to do that by machine without that foundation for the 1-inch. It's just...
Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah, it's really tedious, and but I'm sure there are people who do it and find great joy in it.
Nice about the interfacing is now a 1-inch square. Sewing 1-inch squares mm-hmm. becomes sewing along a 3-inch or 9-inch line.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, just sounds so much more reasonable than sewing all those little teeny pieces together.
Right, Right. So tell me, when, because you're a great scrap collector now and you have this wonderful system with your books and that you call scrap therapy and you really live it, how do you look at buying fabric? Do you like look at mostly tonals, or what do you do? We have about 2 minutes left on the show.
Well, you know, I still see, I see fabrics and I buy them. I don't necessarily just stick to making scraps from, or making quilts from just my scraps. Mm-hmm. I usually like to look for that focus print, that inspiration fabric from which I can draw some of my favorite colors. And those favorite colors then come from my scrap bin. So for me, it's really important when I buy new fabric to look at the colors that I love to use, the prints that I see will be potentially a focus print, mm-hmm. and just incorporate those pieces into my quilts. I like to incorporate new stuff with scrap stuff, so it feels a little bit like decadent dessert and diet soft drink.
You know, that's, I just love that. That's really funny.
Who hasn't done it, right?
Right, right, right. Yes, I'll have a Diet Coke with that chocolate cake.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
So now you can just say, I'll have a yard of fabric with my scraps.
That's right. Oh, my gosh, that is so good. Perfect, perfect. So tell me, you have a book that you're working on that'll be out, you know, in a little bit, but it does it have a little bit different theme?
It does. I'm really excited about it. It's, again, through the Taunton Press. The first two books were from the Taunton Press as well. Mm-hmm. The new book's due out in early 2015, so just a few short months from now. Seems like the summer's flying, so the next few months will go pretty fast as well. And the title is When Bad Things Happen to Good Quilters. And we all have little mishaps in the sewing room, and so this takes kind of a helpful but also humorous approach to solving some of those sewing room problems.
Well, Joan, that is just the best, because we all need, and I bet we laugh when we read this book.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The best part is the glossary, because I did throw in quite a bit of humor in there as well.
Right. So tell everybody your website.
Website is hummingbird-highway.com, and I also have Facebook and Twitter and all those
newsletter.
Related social media.
Yeah, and you have a great newsletter, so people can sign up for that too.
Oh, yeah. You get a free pattern when you sign up for the newsletter, so that's a must.
Perfect. Well, Joan, thank you so much for joining me again and talking scraps.
Oh, thanks so much, Pat. So nice always to talk with you.
We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are going to talk with Karen Combs. And I am so excited because I have not interviewed Karen before, and it is going to be a whole lot of fun to have her tell us about her work and her quilts. They are spectacular. Karen, thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. It's great to be here.
You know, I got so excited when I had a chance to chat with you at the trade show in your booth about your quilts and your optical illusion quilts, because they are fascinating to me. I've not worked in that sort of method. Tell me a little bit about how you got started with loving optical illusions.
Well, I have always done handwork, even as a teenager, and I think what got me started in the quilting trail was I saw an antique tumbling block quilt, and I remember just standing there looking at it thinking, that can't be flat. How is that done? It just sucked me right in, and that's where I started.
Oh, that is so funny. So what was the antique quilt? It was describe the tumbling blocks.
Well, it was an antique tumbling block quilt, kind of done in solid colors. It probably was a more of an Amish-looking quilt. It was just kind of a piece of one that I saw at a quilt store, and it was one of my first visits to a quilt store. Remember, this was when I was 16, so it was a long time ago.
Right. So why don't you explain what it means to have a quilt that's an illusion quilt? Because some people may not really understand what that means. It's kind of like a 3D thing, right?
Well, it can be. There's several different ways to do illusions. There's the illusion of depth when you think of a tumbling block quilt. It's a pattern that looks like it is spatial. You can actually touch it. It has a form. But there's also illusions you can do with color, such as transparency, and there's also the illusion of motion. We don't use that quite as much in our quilts, but there's several different ways you can create an illusion in a quilt.
Now, have you ever actually made traditional quilts, Karen, or did you just sort of go right to this type of quilt?
Well, I think even my traditional quilts, and I have made some, have some sort of an illusion. Storm at Sea was one that I made early on, and again, that has the illusion of curves, even though it's straight piecing. Mm-hmm. So I have done some traditional quilts, but they always tend to have a nod toward an illusion of some kind.
I really loved your Celtics that you had in the booth, because not only did you have quilts, but you also had fabric with Celtic designs on it. Tell me a little bit about the Celtic pieced illusion quilts, because you wrote a whole book about them.
I did. They're done very simply, believe it or not. There's just two blocks that create the quilt pattern. One is a nine patch, very simple to do, and the other one is called what I call a connector block. That's a slanted block, and when you have the straight come into the slant, it creates the illusion of a curve, and all of a sudden you have a way to create the illusion of a chained design or a Celtic design. So it's a pieced Celtic design, and the possibilities are almost endless once you know how to play with those two blocks.
Now, I found that you, your video on this was also super helpful. You have gone and shown how to match up the sections, because you're doing like strips, you know, for the Celtic design, but you have to match block to block. What's the best way to approach that?
Well, I do have a video on my website. There's a link at the bottom of the website, which is just KarenColmes.com, which will take you to the video. And when you have a straight piece coming into a slanted piece, it's always hard to judge where to pin it. So there's a little trick I use in marking and then using a pin to adjust it before I sew it that is very helpful. And I found that it's just best to illustrate it on a video so that people can watch it over and over again, stopping when they need to do it along with me.
So when you're matching the one slanted and one straight, what is the most common problem that you find? Because I know you teach and everything, you know, what's the most common thing that they need to focus on?
Probably, well, one of the things I found is helpful is to use finer straight pins instead of the big, giant ones. Use the fine patchwork pins, because then they can really adjust and pin it correctly instead of having the pins so thick it's hard to adjust. And taking just a moment to mark the quarter inch down, sticking the pin in there, that will help too. The video shows that really well, so you can see how to do it.
That's an excellent tip.
You know, another tip. Oh, I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Another tip I've found is using best press or sizing before you ever start to cut the fabric. And I use a dry iron because I found steam tends to stretch the fabric. But if I use the best press or the sizing ahead of time and lightly mist and iron, it I think of it as a girdle. It's holding the bias from stretching. And I often tease and say, I wish I could just spray myself with it too and it would work. But I do find that that works very well to help the bias from stretching when you're even before you start cutting, it helps.
Now, you, those are great tips, Karen.
I think that really helps.
Yeah, that I think people will be very successful with those. One of the things that you are known for is your fabric designs. Why did you want to start designing fabric?
I started about 14 years ago, and it was basically something I'd always wanted to do. And it also came out of the need of finding, not finding the fabric I needed to create illusions. Because often I'm working with a single color, but a gradation in that color, I just couldn't find the fabric. So I was approached by a company about 14 years ago to design for them, and I've been doing it ever since.
Now, are your fabrics cottons or batiks or both?
They're both. I do print, design print lines as well as batik lines.
For the illusions, like when we're talking about this, you know, matching and you know, do you find the batiks are a better option or does it matter?
I find it doesn't matter. And one thing I also do that a lot of people hesitate to do is I mix prints and batiks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the rule was ever stated that you can't, but I do it all the time and very easy to do. And it gives the quilts another, well, just kind of a special sparkle when you do that.
I'm so glad you said that because I do the same thing. I don't feel a need to separate them.
Right.
Yeah, so they're all cotton. Some are just a little tighter weave, have a little, you know, they're just all fabric. Throw it all in there.
Exactly right.
So when you're shopping, so now we're on fabric. So when you're shopping, I know you have your own lines to work with, but do you also buy fabric to work with?
I do. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a nice big giant closet filled with fabric almost to the point where I can't close the door.
Well, that's a true quilter, Karen.
You know? I know.
So when is there a particular fabric that works better for illusion quilts? You know, because you have fabrics with big florals, geometrics, and you have tiny prints and you have tonals. What do you think, like for especially somebody just starting, what should they try to focus on?
When I'm making an illusion quilt, I find that tone on tone works best. The reason being is if you have too much of a pattern in a quilt fabric, all of a sudden your eye goes to the pattern of the fabric, it doesn't see the illusion. So I love tone on tone fabrics for that reason. I think of using fabric as paint and painting the illusion with the fabric. So my first go-to fabric's always going to be tone on tone.
You know, I think that's an excellent point that your eye would start looking at the floral or the geometric, and then you lose the shape of the geometric. Fascinating. When you go out to a quilt show, what kind of, you know, quilts are do you gravitate towards, you know, when you go in a room?
Well, I really love antique quilts, especially antique Amish quilts. There's something about the shapes, the simplicity, the color, the wool. They just grab me every single time. So that's always where I go first, antique quilts.
Do you own any?
I have an antique quilt top, and that's about it.
Yes.
I have a lot of pictures of antique quilts, but I don't own too many of them.
Did you have quilters in your family, Karen?
My mother sewed, and in fact, she would tailor clothes, so there was always a sewing machine set up in the dining room. But nobody really knew anything about piecing, so I'm all self-taught.
Wow. That's fantastic. So you, besides, you know, teaching yourself, you go out and you teach now. Do you travel all year long or is it just certain periods of time?
I travel most of the year. I usually, middle of November through December, do not. And so sometimes try to take a little time off in the summer, just so if the rest of the year's been really busy, there's a break to catch up and catch my breath in the middle of the summer.
Well, you need the time to design, don't you?
Yeah, it's hard to find time to do everything. You really have to be organized with your time to be able to do it all.
And I was just talking to Joan Ford before you, and she has taught on her first cruise. You've taught on a lot of the sort of big event trips, cruises, and going to other countries, right?
I have. I absolutely love that. Traveled with Quilt Seminars at Sea for several years now, and one of the favorite places, well, we just went there in April, right before market, was Tahiti. It was fantastic.
Oh, my goodness. What was the best thing fabric-wise about Tahiti?
Well, I'm always looking at design. So the color of the water was just striking. So I have a lot of pictures of water. And then, of course, the Tahitian fabrics, when we would walk around town, you'd see them, you know, people wearing them, see them as curtains, see them in the houses, see them in the windows. It was fantastic.
Did you have to buy another suitcase to get home?
Well, since I went with handouts and things for my students,
yes.
I had room coming back. It was kind of full, yeah.
Well, so people can go out to your website, KarenCombs.com, and sign up for your newsletter, read your blog, find out where you're teaching, right?
Yes, and we do have a little section called Fun Stuff. It's fun stuff, but there's also some good educational charts and things like that that I put up there that I like to have handy, and I've shared them with anyone that comes to the website there as well.
Thank you, Karen. It's been so much fun to chat.
Oh, thank you, Pat, so very much.
We are going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan. When I do the trade show, it's really great because we're not always next to the same people, which gives me the opportunity to have my booth across or next to or near lots of other different designers. And it is so inspirational to see their work. Bonnie Ferguson was across me. Her company is called Fish Sticks Designs, and her booth was directly across from mine, the one show. And we got to chatting, and she has adorable, adorable projects. And a lot of them are for boys. I just thought it'd be great because it's so hard to find boy things to have Bonnie come on and talk about her work and share what she's doing. So welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Hi, Pat.
How many days did we spend chatting? Like five, right?
Probably five, from setup all the way through to teardown. Yes, it's a long time, isn't it?
I know, it is. I know, we become new best friends during that. It's great.
It is super. I always enjoy meeting new people there.
So tell me how you got into sewing. Did you sew from a little girl or later in life?
You know what? I think I learned to sew when I was younger. I feel like I've always been sewing straight line projects, pillows and curtains and simple patchwork quilts for baby showers, that kind of thing. But I really got excited about sewing as an adult when I was expecting my fifth child about 8 years ago. So really, I've just been sewing a lot for about 8 years. So it hasn't been a whole lot, a really long time.
So how many boys do you have yourself?
I have four boys.
You have four boys.
Four boys and, yeah, two girls, but my girls are older, so I have little boys at home.
Yeah, I know you sew a lot of clothing, and was that because you wanted to create things, unique things for your boys?
You know, I'm not sure how I got into clothing. It just has been something I've always been excited about doing, maybe because I like sewing stuff that's practical, that you can use every day. I actually, when I first got excited about sewing, I started out sewing cloth diapers because we were expecting a new baby, and it was something that I wanted to try. We'd never cloth diapered before, so and I think sewing clothing just kind of stemmed from that. It's kind of the same idea, you know, sewing elastic and fitting something to a person.
And with children, they're sort of straight-sided. They don't have, like, a lot of curves to deal with yet.
Right.
Yeah.
It definitely makes designing for children a lot easier than designing for adults, especially adult women are a lot more difficult to fit curves and such. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I always hear. All the pattern designers that do children's things are like, oh, no, you don't understand. It's not like women's clothing. You know, little children's is a really So one of the things you told me, Bonnie, was that you like practical projects and practical designs because you're a busy mom. So tell me how you incorporate that.
Right. As a busy mom, when I find time to sew, I want to be able to sew something that I'm going to get to see often. You know, I don't tend to sew things as often. I mean, I do sometimes sew things for special occasions, but for the most part, I like to sew things that you see every day. One of my favorite things to sew is jackets for the winter, you know, zip-up jackets or hoodies, because kids tend to wear them every day, so you get to see them often. So the amount of time that you put into it, you actually get a lot of return for it, which is something that I enjoy.
Now, are you using, I know you're not using just cottons, but what are the different fibers that you are using?
I do use cottons, but my knits are really a favorite of mine. I think most people, when you buy clothing in the store, you're going to buy knits because that's what's comfortable. It's what most of us prefer to wear. And what's interesting is I actually have sewn far more knits than I have cottons. When I first got excited about sewing, I was sewing knits and didn't realize, I think, that so many people are nervous about them. And it's not difficult, really, to sew knits. It's just having the right tools and knowing how to work with them and practice.
So what is a tip for somebody, like what, if they wanted to try one of your patterns to just start out with a knit and a simple pattern, what are some tips and which ones should they use?
You know, if you're just starting out with a knit, a basic t-shirt is a great place to start. My basic t-shirt pattern is called the Charlie T, and it has a lot of options, which is great too. But it starts you out with just the basic t-shirt, and it gives you tips on different, you know, what fabrics to use, how to walk through it. One of the things that's unique about my patterns is that each step has a photograph, so you can see exactly what everything's supposed to look like as you walk through it. Mm-hmm. I say it's kind of like being in my sewing room with me, you know, just following each step as you go. And two, I'm always available if anybody has questions. One of the huge advantages to working with independent designers is that they're available if you have any issues to walk through. But really, a basic t-shirt is a great place to start as far as knit patterns. Or underwear is another good option. I have a couple of underwear patterns, which sounds a little silly, but you know what? It's something that no one's going to see it. So, you know, if you, except for the
practice.
Person who's wearing it, obviously. But, you know, if you sew a pair and it doesn't work out quite right, then, you know, they're going to be usable and you can just keep working until you're successful.
I love the name of your children's underwear, the Little Fishies Undies. And it's they're adorable. I mean, little flowers and chevrons and little boys with rockets and, you know, little, you know, animals. It's just so cute. What knits company would quilters find, like, in a quilt shop? Would they find knits in the quilt shops?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of the fabric companies are coming out with the knits. Riley Blake is one of my very favorites. They have a beautiful line of stretch jersey fabrics. They're a cotton spandex blend, which is easy to work with. It has a great weight to it. It has a really good recovery. So it's one that if you stretch it out a little bit when you're sewing, it's going to bounce back well for you. Again, as long as you're using the right tools, you want to make sure that you have a jersey or a ballpoint needle when you're working with knits.
Okay.
A walking foot is a great thing to have. And the quilters probably know that a walking foot has these teeth on the top that help to guide the top of the fabric along with the bottom. So it works the same way for knits. Helps to kind of pull the top and the bottom through at the same time, so it keeps it from stretching out as much.
So what is the stitch what stitch do you use then? A straight stitch or something else?
You know, I tend to use a straight stitch. But I also have this other little trick that in the bobbin, when I'm working with knits, I wind a stretchy nylon thread, something like woolly nylon or Maxi-Lock stretch. It's those kind of fuzzy threads that you see when you look at serger threads. I wind that into the bobbin on my sewing machine, and that helps to give that the seam a little bit more stretch when you're sewing with your sewing machine. And on hems, though, when you want more stretch, a double needle is the best thing to use because that's going to give that stretch because it has a zigzag on the back with the two rows of stitches on the front.
Right. Oh, I've never used that needle, the double needle.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to try it. You know, I have a whole tutorial on my blog for it that walks you through how to thread your machine and how to use it to do hems. Really, it makes a huge difference. And when you're sewing knits, it gives it that kind of professional kind of finish, too. So, you know, it makes it look like it has, you know, just a nice finish to it, really. And it gives it that stretch because it has the zigzag on the back, so it's not going to tend to break as much as if you just use a straight stitch.
So I'm going to have to look at that. How do you find the tutorials on your website that you've done?
If you go to my website, fishfixdesigns.com, and click on blog, in the right-hand column, you'll see a tutorials link. Actually, on my main page on Fish Fix Designs, too, there's a tutorial link that'll take you right to the whole list of my tutorials. So that's good.
So I have to read that one. It's like, they're scary. Yes, two needles, how do I thread that? That's like...
I know. It's not as hard as it sounds, really. Yep. As long as you have the basics, it's easy. And I also have a whole series a few years ago on sewing with knits that kind of tells you the different types of knits. I mentioned that Riley Blake has some great stretch jerseys, and there's some other companies as well. There's a lot of stretch jerseys available on the market, but there's some interlocks, too. Birch Fabrics has some great interlocks, and interlocks, if you're just starting out sewing knits, are always a really good choice because they're a little thicker and they're more sturdy. What is an interlock? The difference, an interlock, if you've ever knitted anything, an interlock has that V on the front and on the back. So it looks the same. If it's a solid color, it's not going to have a right side or a wrong side. It's going to be the same on the front and the back. It tends to have a pretty good stretch to it, but it also recovers really nicely, as opposed to something like a rib knit, which when you stretch it out, it doesn't bounce back as well. So rib knits are really the most difficult, I think, for beginners to knit. Interlocks are great if you're just starting out because they're easy to work with. They have a lot more substance to them than some of the other knits, but they still have a good stretch to them.
You know a lot about knits. That's just fantastic.
I do. I love knits. And as opposed to, interlocks have that V on the front and the back, where jerseys have that V on the front and more of the pearl stitch, if you're knitting, that straight line on the back. So they have a definite wrong and right side.
Well, I want to switch gears a little bit, and
okay.
you have sort of a great story about the 1 million pillowcase challenge here at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. Would you share it with us?
I would love to do that. Several years ago, leading up to my 40th birthday, I wanted to challenge myself to do something, and I ran across the Million Pillowcase Challenge, and so I challenged myself to sew 40 pillowcases in 40 days leading up to my 40th birthday, and it was great. It was so much fun. I met a lot of people who volunteer with Conquer Cancer, and actually deliver the pillowcases, people from all over. I even sent some of my pillowcases to a friend in Canada who is the coordinator for her area for that particular division. And it really was a very neat thing. And I've used that those pillowcases, too. I've sewn them since then for all sorts of other charity things. Again, it's a practical thing that you can sew. It's quick and simple, and people enjoy it because they can actually use it. I mean, it's something handmade that you can give that's actually useful, which is really fun.
I think that that's just wonderful. It's wonderful to hear how people get involved to support their local charities and using the pillowcase challenge. Yay!
Yeah.
So you do things besides clothing. We're kind of wrapping up this segment. If you would tell me about like your Go Fish series, I love that name.
Thank you. You know what? I actually have really enjoyed those patterns. I call them instant gratification projects because they're very quick and simple. They're straightforward. They're great for people who use the quilting because you don't have pattern pieces. You just have measurements that you just cut with your rotary cutter and ruler and really straightforward instructions.
So a lot of bags. You have bags and totes.
There's all sorts of things. There's bags, yeah. And there's a wallet. There's a little diaper changing pad and diaper case that rolls out. There's a new lunch bag. I guess there are a lot of bags.
You have a sewing organizer that goes under the machine. That's really cool.
Yes. I love that. My favorite part of that one is the little magnetic pin cushion thing that has a removable magnet. So you keep your pins from – my pins always tend to be flying all over my sewing room. So it's nice that I just kind of toss them towards that magnet and they stay put. But it has pockets and other things to keep you organized. Yeah.
And do you have a tip for getting in more sewing while raising a lot of kids? Because real quick tip.
When they're – yeah, that's okay. When they're little, take advantage of nap time if you can. And, and you find little spots of time. You find ways to entertain them. My little ones just enjoy picking up fabric. They get excited when I'm sewing for them. So they'll
that's
give
cool.
me the time to actually sew for them when,
well, Bonnie,
when they're excited.
This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for inviting me. It was a lot of fun.
Visit Bonnie Ferguson at fishsticksdesigns.com, and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything. And we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have quilt maker Dana Bouillard from Old Red Barn, and she is a new author. She has her first book out. She's an amazing quilt maker and community builder online. She's been just an inspiration to so many people. And to be able to now have a book from her, it's just golden. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Oh, thanks for having me, Pat. It's so good to be here.
You know, I am excited about your book because the patterns are fresh and wonderful. It's from Martingale. And it's called Imagine Quilts, 11 Patterns from Everyday Inspirations. What's it feel like to hold it in your hands, the real copy?
I'm sure you know well. You've written many, many books. It's a long process. And just so finally have the final version, the printed version in your hand, I almost don't want to put it down.
To make it a little pillow so that you can sleep with it.
Well, maybe not that far, but it's kind of a thrill. And I have them sitting around, and my eye will catch it during the day, and I'm like, that is crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about the book. You know, that's what I really want to talk about. You write that you're not really a big pattern based person, that isn't sort of your go-to thing. So you're used to sort of thinking things up and liking to approach it a different way. So tell me a little bit about how you approached putting a book together.
Well, yeah, like you said, I don't consider myself a pattern sewer. Like, I don't go to my local quilt shop and look at their patterns and think, oh, I'm going to make that one. Mm-hmm. That's not really my process. Instead, I'm just walking through the world and something strikes my fancy and I'm like, wow, those colors are amazing. Or look at those shapes, or maybe it's a combination of the two. And I just think it sort of sticks in my head. And then that's how it works for me. So I think, well, I can make that into a quilt, or I should make that into a quilt. And then that's what I start doing. I grab some graph paper always and a pencil with a big old fat eraser on the end. And I just start sketching it out and trying to come up with some plan on how I can turn what's in my head into fabric and thread.
Now, are you ever inspired first by fabric, or does it often come from some other direction?
Oh, yeah. Fabric is such an inspiration. There's so much beautiful design in available to us as sewers, as quilters. Yes, sometimes the fabric speaks to me, but a lot of times it's just something that pings in my brain. I don't know how else to describe it. It's some movie I've watched, or it's something somebody says, or it's some beautiful part of nature that's how it works for me. And so when I was writing the book, because I get asked that all the time, where did you get your ideas for your quilt? Mm-hmm. So I tried to sort of boil that down into some steps that maybe people could take too that might work for them.
Yeah, you did a really nice job on each of the quilts in your book explaining how they developed, you know, for you. And so people, I think that's fascinating because people can see that it's a very doable process. You just might need to think a little differently, right?
Absolutely. Everybody does that. And I would bet you everyone does that anyway. Even if you're buying a pattern, you're tweaking it your own way. You're tweaking even if you don't think you're tweaking it, because you're selecting fabric. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to change the dimension a little bit. Maybe you want it to be a bigger quilt or a smaller quilt. Everybody's doing it. But sometimes as humans that we are, we just don't seem to have this confidence within ourselves. But of course, everybody can do that.
Now, the book has four sections. Tell me about that part of it.
Well, there's four.
Well, why there's four, why there's sections, why you group them.
Well, just sort of, you know, because I give you some examples within each section. So for example, the first section, it says be inspired by your stash.
Okay.
Okay, so you, if you're anything like me, you buy fabric and you buy fabric and you buy fabric. You have more fabric than you have a plan for. All right, so take a look at it. Where is the color value? Do you notice a lot of gray fabric? That's where the first quilt in my book was inspired from, because I was cleaning up and rearranging, organizing, and I'm stacking by color. And I have this huge pile of gray fabric. And suddenly it toppled over. And I don't know, I just thought, oh my gosh, this is like an elephant parade going on in here. I've got all this fabric. And so, boom, there was my idea for my next quilt.
You know, I love that one, Dana, the elephant parade.
Thank you.
I really, really love it. It is simple, but super effective. And it's perfect. It's just a great quilt.
Well, thank you. I'm really drawn to patchwork. Scrappy. I love as many fabrics and prints and solids that you can put into one quilt, the better. And, you know, Elephant Parade really, really hits all those marks because it's pretty scrappy.
Tell me about the section called Look Around, because I think that that's where people, like you said, they are observing, but they don't realize they're observing. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got three quilts that I've got under that section. One I call Dance Floor, and I was watching a movie. I wish I could remember the name of the movie. I can't even. And it was set in the Deep South, probably in about the 1930s or 40s. And there's this scene where there's this wedding, this big southern plantation, and they've set out this dance floor, and it's a black and white, you know, checker floor. And it was just so beautiful, and the green grass and everything. And so I'm just watching a movie, and then I'm grabbing my graph paper because I'm like, oh, that would be a really cool quilt. So, yeah, so it's just looking around your world. Another quilt in that section is Patchwork Whale. I have this obsession with whales. I collect little whale thingies, not a lot, but I have a few little whale thingies. I just think there's something so beautiful about that animal, and let's put it on a quilt. And so I did, and everybody is observing in their world. Everybody likes certain things, is drawn to certain things. Well, turn it into a quilt. What's better than that?
And your whale is pieced, which is really nice to have pieced images, because a lot of people don't applique, you know, so being able to create an image pieced is super nice.
And it's squares, and it's 5-inch charms, and it's a few half square triangles. You know, that's, everybody can do that. Whether you're a beginning quilter or you're an advanced quilter, you can do that, no problem.
So when you were putting this together, did you have any kind of like little funny moments or anything where you're like, oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to figure that out? Since this is your first book.
Yeah, for sure. When I was writing it, I'll tell you, it definitely made me a better quilter. It, you know, when you're having to translate your process, when you're translating your process, putting it out there and having to write it in a way that everybody can understand, you really are fine-tuning your craft and really, really being thoughtful about it. And so that was hard at first, and I got better towards the end. But yeah, there was more than a few furrowed brows and times when I was like, what am I doing here? But I managed to make it work, and the great staff, the great editorial team at Martingale just certainly was helpful in that regard.
Right. They are a fantastic team that you can really rely on for helping you get through that process.
Absolutely.
Now, the quilt that's on the cover, what can you tell us about that one on the cover of the book?
Yeah, that one I call Posy Patrol. And it's a special one to me. My mom and I have this thing we do, and I didn't realize I was doing it until one day. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm turning in my mother. she lives in Savannah, Georgia, about 350 miles away from where I live. And every day in the spring and the summer and probably even the fall, she takes a little stroll through her yard. And she just is looking and seeing what's blooming and what needs care. And I have teased her for a good long while and called it her daily posy patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess it was last year sometime. Well, yeah, it was when I was writing this book. I stopped what I was doing and I looked at myself and I'm outside and I'm looking around to see what's blooming, and I was doing it every day, just like my mom. So I was doing my daily posy patrol too. So this quilt is really to honor her, and it's got a posy type shape, a flower type shape, and
yeah. It's got like rows, so yeah, it looks like you could be going through rows of flowers. Yeah, and it's got curves. So do you have a tip for those curves?
What is that? What did you say about curves?
That this particular quilt, the Posy Patrol, has just a very nice little curve in it to make the block. Can you tell me about that, how you do it?
Yeah, I do it without pins or without glue basting or any sort of basting. I don't snip the seam allowance after I've done it. It's an old dressmaker's trick. And once you've got it down and you've figured out how to do it, you can fly through all those little pieces that require that curved piecing quick.
So can you do like match end to end, or how do you put that through then?
Okay, so let's talk about your standard Brunkard path unit. So you've got your concave piece and your convex piece. So, in other words, you've got your outer edge, and then you've got your pie-shaped piece.
Right.
Are you following me?
Yep.
So,
we have about a minute, I get this in.
Yep. So, yeah, you are putting right sides together, and I use some long-nosed tweezers.
Okay.
And I'm just guiding those edges together. I'm not pulling. Pulling is really counterintuitive to a quilter because as it's going, it seems like it's not going to line up. It seems like the ends aren't going to meet. But as long as you're not pulling and you're just guiding those edges together as you sew your quarter-inch seam, it'll come out perfectly every time.
Well, Dana, this has been wonderful. I am so excited about your book, and I really think I need to make a Posy Patrol quilt.
Oh, that would be such a thrill. If I saw on your website or on your Instagram feed or on your Facebook page that you were making one of my quilts, I might just pass right out, Pat Sloan.
Well, everybody needs to go visit Dana at oldredbarnco.blogspot.com. And I want to thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always so nice to talk to you.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit the magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.